Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem Shir number 208 on Rav Zelda Pliskin's farm and on Rav Tversky's Sefer, currently on Life's Too Short, about self-esteem. And we're going to talk about that book today in his chapter 25. Baruch Hashem almost finished this wonderful book. It's a beautiful book on self-esteem. And we're going to go through perhaps another one on Rav Tversky's thoughts and practical tools on self-esteem. But he has a chapter here called Setting Priorities. A big part of building self-esteem is understanding and working through what your role is in life, what you desire about yourself, instead of drifting through life, which creates a lack of self-esteem and it feeds on one each other, to steer your course of your life in a healthy way, not let others define your role, to think truly that you have a purpose in life and what you want to wish to be. And you may have several roles and you have to be realistic in balancing all of them. And he's going to talk about this in this share. We're going to discuss it. So he gives an example. You know, a woman may decide she wants to be a wife and a mother and a daughter and a professional person and an active community member. And all these demands causes conflict with one another. You know, any of those functions are not fulfilled, she may look at herself and say, I failed in that role. But when you reevaluate yourself, when this woman would reevaluate herself and be realistic about her goals, and that will allow her to set priorities and realizes that you're making choices between conflicting demands. And the fact that you let go somewhat of one of these roles, does not mean that you are derelict in your duties, does not mean that you're a failure or that you're not functioning properly. Because, you know, we all work through this balancing of life. So therefore, we have to decide within ourselves, what functions do we delegate to others? Which functions do we want to fulfill personally and for how much? And we don't need to do this with any inappropriate guilt. If you took on too much and you have to let go of something, there should not be that guilt that gets latched on with it. You have to let go in a healthy way. So, for example, a lot of working people may feel guilty that they put their small children in daycare or an older children, whatever. They're alone in the house sometimes because you're working and you feel, you're a lousy parent. That's not so. That's a typical area of a parent-career conflict that could cause emotional distress. And how do you resolve such a conflict? Is an example in this case when you're struggling between, let's say, motherhood and working and profession. It does not mean you necessarily abandoned either role. You could figure out a balance, choosing a proper daycare program, choosing a proper type of job where children will have receiving a wholesome parenting, even if you're involved in somewhat a career. However, when you see that a career absorbs too much time and energy, that it encroaches on your relationship with your children, doesn't mean you shut it down and stop working altogether. No. What it means is you could delegate some of those career responsibilities or cut back somewhat. So all this requires planning, consistency. Neither function has to suffer, is what we're saying. And you don't have to be guilt-ridden because of it. So that's the idea. The inconsistency or the lack of balance causes sometimes emotional turmoil. So to talk about these things and to work it through, to have a coach or mentor guiding you through it, will certainly help you. You know, and sometimes you have situations, matzavim, that create this lack of balance. Let's say chalila, child is ill for a short period, for a more extended period. It may cause a little bit, difficulties in the person thinking they're drifting from their roles and whatever it is. So you have to be in tune to the life struggles that come along and not feel guilty about it. He gives an example here, this lady, Ellen. Very important to listen to this, and I think you'll be able to apply this to your own life in different situations. She came one day, she had a self-help group, and she was very upset. She was advanced to a supervisor position in her company, and it created problems because it had a greater workload now for her. Several weeks earlier, her father suffered a stroke and was discharged from the hospital. And he could have been admitted to a rehabilitation institution, but her mother insisted that her father receive physical therapy at home. Now, Ellen herself did not think it was right. She feels that the quality of treatment at home was not as good as in the facility, but her mother was strong-willed and demanded that only she could take care of her husband. And Ellen realized that her mother was unrealistic and that caring for her father would require more time and energy. So she decided to quit her job, or at least ask for a leave of absence to help with her father's care, to help her mother with her father's care. And the group that Ellen was in explained that it was not wise for her to do that or to make that move, because then you're going to be an accomplice to your father not receiving the best possible treatment by giving in to your mother this way. They pointed out to Ellen that if she was firm and she told her mother, "I'm not going to interrupt my work with this inappropriate demand," she may be more apt, the mother may be more apt to listen to reason. And Ellen received a lot of support from her group, and with the help of her doctor and her minister, her social worker, she was able to convince her mother to allow the treatment at the Rehabilitation Institute. At the next session, Ellen was commended for doing the right thing, because that was the right thing, but Ellen had a lot of guilt feelings. She began to ventilate guilty feelings about her decision, because her mother was very critical of the care her father was receiving. She's still insisting that she would be cared better at home. And what happened based on this discussion, Ellen realized that she assumed the caregiver codependent role all the way back from childhood. It wasn't just this particular matzev. Her self-worth was always contingent upon what she could do for others. And Ellen felt that doing anything for herself was wrong or selfish. And this pattern permeated through her adult life. But now with this crisis with her father, it came out more. They continued to support Ellen, encourage her to seek a therapist to resolve her codependency. And that provided realistic and appropriate help for her parents. So that's an example of learning how to let go and have that balance. Another example. Again, these examples may not be exactly to your life situation, but I think every one of you could see when there is an imbalance and where you need to let go and give without guilt feelings away some of those hefty responsibilities that you have within you. So as much as we have in literature and Torah, how much you should accomplish things, but not to the expense of overtaxing yourself to a point that you're out of alignment with yourself and what Hashem wants from you. That's one of the, you have to have a half hadracha. Some people are lazy and they don't accomplish things, and that's their problem, and they have to work through that and become more focused and oriented towards productivity and healthy action. There are others that are overwhelmed by that and they're already overtaxed and they need to learn that balance like we're discussing today. Here's another example. Stella was a secretary at a small law firm, and the firm merged. She was promoted to office manager, and the demands on Stella, because she was good, became excessive and unreasonable, and she began to experience burnout. She also attended adult meetings of adult children of alcoholics, and she said instead of hiring additional clerical staff, her employers were piling more and more work on her. And she was spending evenings and weekends at the office. And when asked, "Why don't you simply tell your employers that you're overworked?" Stella admitted that it was virtually impossible for her to refuse any request. The group identified with Stella because many children of alcoholic parents suffer that can't say no syndrome. It's very difficult for them. And one of the group suggested that they should practice saying no. They should practice saying no. For example, one member said that she had to leave town for a week and ask someone else to care for her dog so she would save the expense of bringing the dog to kennel. And each member would say politely no and give a plausible reason. And it was an enjoyable game. They practiced with each other saying no. And the group realized that this strategy of being able to express to each other requests and then declining it by saying no, it helped them diffuse the issue. It helped them practice saying no in a protective confines of a group, which will make them it easier to apply that same technique in real life. And Stella's difficulty in refusing an improper demand was by no means restricted to the office. She exhibited the same traits with her husband, with her children, with friends, and so on. And they decided they were going to stop their people-pleasing maneuvers and go back, you know, to the group each time they succeeded. So this behavior is not radical. You know, this idea that you're frazzled and overloaded with a workload. And Stella worked up the courage at some point and told her employers, "I had too much workload. I need two more secretaries." She was pleasantly surprised that they readily implemented her suggestion. And that had a ripple effect on her behavior, on her friends, on her family. She gained a lot of self-esteem and self-assertion and so on. So in other words, the sight of what we just said, this example, and the truth is the other example as well, is that this concept that many of us are people pleasers, that we find it difficult to deny requests. And we have to realize is the legitimacy of refusing unreasonable requests that has to be internalized in a person. And people who attend self-help groups attest not only to their being able to discontinue various ineffective behaviors, but also their sense of self-esteem was significantly increased. So maybe there's a mahalach, and I was thinking a lot about this. If there's a way, you know, people have these groups just with AAA meetings and addictions, which is a beautiful thing. But I think every human being needs to set up these type of systems. Maybe have a mentor, someone who is you know, trained in it and in these concepts, and then create these small groups, men individually, women individually, of let's say 5, 6, 7 of them, working together once a week with each other about these roles, things similar to what we talked about over here, supporting each other, learning healthy habits, in this case of these two examples we gave here, of dealing with the overburden of misplaced guilt about your responsibilities. The same applies, by the way, just to let you know, about the chesed you do for the community or tzedakah. You know, some people have the problem, they give too little tzedakah, or they're hard to part with their money and they need to give more and they know they're able to. And that's one nisayon. Then there's the opposite nisayon sometimes, where one has tremendous guilt feelings of not being able to give enough tzedakah, and sometimes they give more than they should. And a rav may actually tell them, for you have to limit yourself. You know, people who knock on the door and harass them for things, and they have a hard time saying no, and it's depleting them. But you feel, I can't hold back from that. That's where all the bracha comes in, right? And generally speaking, that is true. The more tzedakah you give, the more bracha you get. There's no question about it. But if you know your personal matzav, and you have a certain situation financially, you talk to a rav about it, and he may tell you, only give X amount when people come to the door. Give X amount for this. You have tuition, pay that first. Give this, whatever. You ask for hadracha. You may be surprised. And some things you feel that you're really doing a mitzvah by this mesiras nefesh that you envision you're having, in reality, is really not healthy for you. So it really needs a shekel, and it really needs discussion. And of course, you need to speak to people who understand these things. But when you feel overtaxed and overburdened by things, even in ruchnias tikkunim, some people, for example, they feel guilty. They want to do tshuva on things, and they will be makabel extra spiritual exercises, and it's not healthy for them to do so. It'll even backfire over time. And they need to tell them, no, you don't accept all these Kabbalahs. You only do certain things that you can do. So this, what we discussed here, is extremely important. And please take it to heart. The healthy balance will definitely help a lot of people if they get the support from each other and the right guidance for it. And it will definitely help many marriages and many families when they have to balance a lot of roles and responsibilities. Bracha v'atzlacha.